Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're continuing our reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 9, Canto 7, chapter entitled Prahlad Pacifies Lord Narsingadev with Prayers, and continuing with text 17. Yasmat priya priya viyoga sanyoga janma. Shokagnina sakala yonishu dayamanaha. Dayamanaha. Dukau sadang tadapi dukamata diaham. Bhuman pramani vadame tavadasya yogam. Yasmat priya priya viyoga sanyoga janma. Sokagnina sakala yonishu dahyamanaha. Dukau sadang tadapi dukamata diaham. Bhuman brahmani vadame tavadasya yogam. Yasmat priya priya viyoga sanyoga janma. Shokagnina sakala yonishu dahyamanaha. Dukau sadang tadapi dukamata diaham. Bhuman brahmani vadame tavadasya yogam. That's tough.
Thank you.
Ladies, please. Yasmat, because of which? Because of existing in the material world. Priya, pleasing. Apriya, not pleasing. Vyoga, by separation. Sangyoga, and combination. Janma, whose birth. Shoga agnina, by the fire of lamentation. Sakala yonishu, in any type of body. Dahyamanaha, being burned. Dukkha aushadam, remedial measures for miserable life. Tat, that. Api, also. Dukkham, suffering. Atatya, by accepting the body as the self. Aham, I. Puman, O great one. Brahmami, I am wandering within the cycle of birth and death. Buddha, kindly instruct. May unto me, Tava, your, Dasya Yogam, activities of service. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Great One, O Supreme Lord, because of combination with pleasing and displeasing circumstances, and because of separation from them, one is placed in a most regrettable position within heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj aspired to engage in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. After the death of his father, who was materially very opulent, Prahlad would have inherited his father's property, which extended throughout the world. But Prahlad Maharaj was not inclined to accept such material opulence, for whether one is in the heavenly or hellish planets, or is a rich or poor man's son, material conditions are everywhere. Therefore, no condition of life is at all pleasing. If one wants the uncontaminated pleasure of blissful life, he must engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Material opulence may be somewhat pleasing for the time being, but to come to that temporary pleasing condition, one must work extremely hard. When a poor man is rich, he may be better situated, but to come to that position, he had to accept many miseries. The fact is that in material life, whether one is miserable or happy, both conditions are miserable. If one actually wants happy, blissful life, One must become Krishna conscious and constantly engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the real remedy. The entire world is under the illusion that people will be happy by advancing in materialistic measures to counteract the miseries of conditional life. But this attempt will never be successful. Humanity must be trained to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. There can be no happiness in changing one's material conditions. For everywhere there is trouble and misery. Om Gyanate Manandasya Agananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmili Dangyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Maha Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prabhu Udali Srimate Palatananda Sanitone Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prabhu Udali Srimate Bhakti Padanta Sanitone Namaste Sarasavata Deve Gauravani Vicharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschyati Ade Shatarne. So this is another very nice verse. Actually, I find the whole Bhagavatam is like this. Every single verse is really nice. Same with the Bhagavad Gita. It's like no matter where you open up to, no matter where you start reading, every verse is pretty amazing. When I was reading this verse, I was first reminded of the pastime from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhilila, chapter 25. Talking about how Lord Chaitanya liberated, he gave bhakti to the inhabitants of Varanasi. So there in Varanasi, Lord Chaitanya met one person who was suffering tremendously, and this person's name was Subhuti Roy. So Subhuti Roy used to be a big landowner, very wealthy landowner in Godadesh in Bengal. And one of his servants was Syeda Hussain Khan. And he very affectionately took care of his servants and treated them like his own sons. And one time he was having Hussain Khan, he put him in charge of digging out this very large lake. But when the Hussain Khan was digging out this lake, there were some errors, there were some faults in his activities. And so Subhuti Roy went to chastise him, went to punish him by whipping him on his back. So many years later, by some arrangement from the central Muslim government, they had appointed this same Syeda Hussain Khan to become the Nawab. But because he was just a servant, he didn't have much opulence, so they also elevated his opulence as they gave him a lot of money and land to fit the position that he was entrusted with. And then later on, he got married. So by the time he was married, his wife had already met him once he was opulent and powerful and had so much influence. And so after married, his wife saw these whip marks on his back, and she asked him what these whip marks were from. And he said, oh, this was from so many years ago. I used to be the servant of one Subhuti Roy. He was a very respected landowner in Bengal. He was having me dig out this big lake. But I made some mistakes, and so I got whipped for it. And so the Hussein's wife, she was a very angry person. And she was very adamant, this Subhuti Roy has to die. How dare he ever whip my husband, even though it was so many years ago. And so she insisted. She insisted to to the Nawab, you must kill this Hussein or this Subhuti Roy. But the Nawab said, how can I kill Subhuti Roy? He was like my own father. He raised me as a child. He treated me as his own son. I can't kill him. But the wife just wouldn't be pacified, and so she said, well, you must at least make him lose his caste. And but the Hussein Khan replied that if I remove his caste, that's the same as death for him. I can't do that either. But the wife just kept nagging him day after day after day until finally he capitulated. And he agreed to sprinkle water from his water pot on Subhuti Roy's head. So back in the days of Lord Chaitanya and in that whole era, even up to much more modern times, there's a whole section of society that they're known as Smarta Brahmins. You know, they follow very strictly the rules and regulations of the Shastras. But the fact is, they've gotten so myopic in their vision, they've lost sight of the purpose behind the rules and regulations. They follow the rules and regulations simply because they're there and simply because they believe they must be followed. And so, at the time, people had this irrational thought that being a Muslim was contagious. At the time, if you were even touched by a Muslim, then you had got the contagion and you were infectious also. And then you became a Muslim. Simply by somebody, some Muslim accidentally touching you. You know, like smallpox or something. And so being sprinkled with the water from the water pot, this was just the same. The effect was the same. So Subhuti Roy was immediately outcast from the whole Hindu society simply because a couple of drops of water had landed on his head. And so he had to leave his wife, his children, his family, and he went to Varanasi. And there in Varanasi, he was asking all the Brahmins, what can I do to counteract this terrible curse? What can I do to give up being a Muslim? And they were all essentially telling him that this is a terminal disease that you have. They were all telling him, oh, you must do this or you must do that, and that will cure you. But the thing was, all the remedies they were giving him would result in his death. Finally, the last Brahmin that he approached told him that he should drink boiling ghee and die. And then maybe in his next life he can be a proper Hindu. So this was all very confusing and very disturbing to him, because they were all telling him different things. They couldn't agree on any one thing, and none of them could give him any remedy, any solution to the problem that wouldn't involve his death. So finally Subhuti Roy met Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya said, forget about all this. Forget about drops of water or accidentally touching some Muslim. This isn't some disease. The real disease is not being Krishna conscious. That's the real disease condition of life. So Lord Chaitanya instructed him, simply chant the holy names and go to Vrindavan. Those are the two instructions. And so Subhuti Roy, he did that. He began chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And then he worked his way to Vrindavan. I think he went through he didn't go directly to Vrindavan, but he worked his way there. He went through Ayodhya, I think, and a few other cities first. And finally he made his way to Mathura. And then in Mathura, he would sell, I forget exactly what it was that he sold, but he would sell a few little things, and then he would bring in about 6 paisa a day. And he would only need 1 or 2 paisa every day for his own maintenance. And the other 4 or 5 paisa he would keep with a local grocer, a local merchant. And then he would use the savings that he deposited with the merchant to actually pay for different necessities for the Vaishnavas. Like, for instance, any Vaishnava pilgrims, especially those coming from Bengal, he would sponsor yogurt for all of them. And this way he would pay for so many amenities for different Vaishnavas coming. And by caring for the Vaishnavas, residing in the holy place, and most importantly, chanting the holy names, he actually became a very exalted devotee of Lord Chaitanya. Very intimate associate. And then when Srila Rupa Goswami first came, Subhuti Roy was actually one of the first devotees that Rupa Goswami met. And Subhuti Roy was just filled with so much affection for Srila Rupa Goswami that he personally gave him a tour of Vrindavan. He gave him a tour of all the 12 forests of Vrindavan and spent actually about a month in constant association with Srila Rupa Goswami until Rupa Goswami finally went to search out for his brother Sanatan Goswami. So this is one example. You know, if Subhuti Roy would have kept on in the material condition of life, simply trying to make adjustments, trying to get some cure for his disease, no matter what he did, it would have been miserable. Being a Muslim, a so-called Muslim, simply because of some water drops, would have made him miserable. He was an outcast. His own family wouldn't talk to him or associate with him for fear that they would also contract this disease. And yet all the solutions to his problem also involved even worse misery. Just like Prahlad Maharaj is saying, although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. That's the very problem here. So Lord Chaitanya gave the simple solution, which Krishna also gives in the Bhagavad Gita. Mamayavangso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manaksastan sastan indriyani prakriti stani karsati. Living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the 6 senses, which include the mind. So this is what we need to realize. We need to realize that we are temporarily in the conditioned world. Well, we don't belong here. We're Krishna's eternal fragmental parts. By realizing that, then we'll no longer make so much endeavor to try to seek relief, to try to solve all the miseries, all the sufferings here in this miserable material condition. Because every time we try to change the suffering we're undergoing, it simply brings more suffering. I remember even when I was a kid, my dad used to tell me that I had no idea how much work it took to have fun. And I was just clueless. I was like, what? What do you mean it takes work to have fun? He said, you'll understand one day. But it's true. Prahlad Maharaj is saying it right here. You know, trying to solve these miseries of material existence, it actually involves even more misery than the miserable problem itself. And yet that's what everyone's trying to do, because everyone thinks that by advancing myself materially, then I can achieve happiness, then I can achieve perfection, I can be satisfied, my life will make sense, I'll have a place in existence. But they don't realize that they're just struggling with their senses. And the more they try to struggle with their senses, the more miseries their senses produce. The chief sense, of course, being the mind. And so naturally the mind can also cause the most amount of misery. That's why we really need to learn how to become tolerant. Krishna also says earlier in the Gita, Matras sparshas tu kaunteya shitoshna sukadukada agamapayino nityas tangsaticha suvarta. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance and disappearance, non-appearance of happiness and distress, and their disappearance in due course, are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O Sayana Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. That's the real thing here. We need to learn how to tolerate. Because we're all struggling with our senses and the objects of the senses, whether it be heat and cold, summer and winter. All these different distresses and dualities of material existence that are bombarding our senses. And our senses are so bombarded and we're so bewildered that we have a very difficult time realizing that we're actually Krishna's eternal fragmental parts. That we don't belong to this material world. And all these struggles that we're undergoing are simply bringing us more and more misery. But yet we're very fortunate that we don't have to try to undergo all these ridiculous processes of the smarta Brahmins, drinking boiling ghee and so many other crazy things. Lord Chaitanya has made it much easier for us. All we have to do is chant the holy names, live in a holy place, and associate with devotees. That's it. Whether you make that holy place your own home, your house, whether you make that holy place the community, like for instance, this community of New Dwarka Dham, it's a dham, it's an actual living place of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There he is, right there. Actually, that's Mother Gunavati. No, yesterday was me. You know, so really what it boils down to is it's just a waiting game. You know, we simply have to engage in Krishna's service and then we just have to wait. And that's really what it boils down to. Even Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Instruction, text 3, he says the same thing. Utsaha nishtaya daryat tat tat karma pravartanat sangatyagat satavritek shadbir bhakti prasidyati. There are 6 principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. 1, being enthusiastic. 2, endeavoring with confidence. 3, being patient. 4, acting according to regulative principles, such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna. 5, abandoning the association of non-devotees. And 6, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These six principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. That last statement is for real. Let me repeat it. The six principles that I just elaborated, undoubtedly, which means without doubt, assure it will happen. The complete success, not partial success, not something, not just a little bit, no. Complete and total success of pure devotional service. This is what we need to remember. This is why the nectar of instruction is so important. It's the foundation of our Krishna consciousness. Even in the introduction, Prabhupada explains, this nectar of instruction should be the first book read by any aspiring devotee. That's how important it is. It's the first book. It's the first word in Krishna consciousness. If you haven't read the nectar of instruction yet, then your foundation is misplaced. It's that simple. And this verse here, text number 3, it explains. Krishna consciousness is a waiting game. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained. No, it wasn't Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It was his name is slipping my mind right now. I forget. But it's explained in another book. If I could look it up, I could have the name and author for you. He's a very famous and well-known previous acharya, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yes. He has explained in one of his books that in the beginning, we start in Krishna consciousness in the beginning levels of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti because we have no love for Krishna. Which is really an incredible statement. You know, according to the definition of Prima Bhakti, yes, that is no love. But at the same time, love is still there. Albeit, it's just a shadow. It's a shadow of pure love. It's not the real thing. But still, a shadow of pure love is far better than no shadow at all. And that's why things are still experienced. Those loving sentiments are still experienced even in the very early stages of Krishna consciousness. And that just goes to show how powerful this love is. How miserable we are struggling in the material world. And then when even a shadow, a portion of a shadow of that pure love is cast upon us, we feel so much ecstasy from that. So in the beginning, we don't have real love for Krishna. We just have this shadow of love. And so when we're executing Krishna consciousness according to, as Rupa Goswami says in this third verse, according to the regulative principles, and by following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, that's why we're also known, as Prabhupada explained, as Rupanugas. Srila Rupa Goswami is one of our previous acharyas. Anuga means to be a follower. So we're Rupanugas. We're following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, following these regulative principles of Krishna consciousness, and waiting, not passive waiting, not just sitting on a couch or laying down. We're actively waiting. We're engaging in Krishna's service according to the directions of the Shastras and the examples of the previous acharyas. And as we're actively waiting, our heart is becoming purified. And gradually, over the course of time, we're guaranteed complete manifestation of Prima Bhakti, pure devotional service within our heart. It's guaranteed. It's not sometimes. It's not, oh, that's your belief, and, well, if that works for you. No, this is guaranteed for everyone. Doesn't matter what you believe. Belief is not required. There's no room for belief. It's a process. It's a science. If you execute this science of Krishna consciousness, this is guaranteed to happen. It's the undisputed result. So whenever we feel like we're not making enough advancement fast enough, or feeling like, why aren't I becoming Krishna conscious? Or we're feeling like, I don't have real love for Krishna in my heart. How can I continue? Yes. Nobody's expected to begin at the end. That's just ridiculous. Everyone begins at the beginning. That's why it's called the beginning. And you progress from there. And you wait. You be patient. Be enthusiastic. Endeavor with confidence. Don't associate with non-devotees. Follow the regular principles and follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And it's guaranteed. You will achieve pure, loving, devotional service to Krishna. So on there, if there's any questions or comments. Bali? There's a mic in the cabinet over there. It does work. You just gotta turn it on. Bali.
Thank you for a nice class, Prabhu. I was wondering, you said that everything in the material world is not real happiness, and it's like suffering.
Mm-hmm.
How do you convince others that their happiness isn't happiness?
Because it's not permanent. It doesn't last.
I mean, just because it's not permanent doesn't mean you don't feel some happiness or pleasure.
Well, yes. It's explained that there are small drops of happiness in this material world, but it always comes at a cost. There's always some cost to it. So in this material world, happiness always comes with distress also. Whether that distress comes before or after the happiness, it's always there. So materialistic people like to rationalize, saying, oh, well, you know, I need my distress. If I don't have my distress, how will I appreciate my happiness? So, yes, let me hurt. Let me not be happy also. But they only say that because they don't realize that you can be happy without being distressed. But that's only possible through Krishna consciousness. And also another thing is the happiness that's experienced in the material world. It's like a couple drops of water in a desert. Like for instance, the Atacama Desert in Chile. It's the driest desert in the world. It's so dry there that it's actually a very deadly desert. If you ever get stranded there, you'll probably die. So what's a couple of drops going to do for a desert? It's not going to do much. It's going to evaporate pretty quick. So in the same way, our heart is like a desert. And what's just a couple of drops of happiness going to do for the desert of our heart? It's simply going to make us suffer so much more out of lamentation and hankering for more happiness. If we have a couple of drops, it's going to be gone before you know it. And then you'll be lamenting so much over that drop of happiness that you had, and now it's lost. And then you'll be in so much more suffering because you'll be hankering for another drop of happiness. But with Krishna consciousness, it floods this desert with an ocean of happiness. It's desert no more. Arjita Prabhu?
Very good question, Bali. That's why the Sankhya is important. You have to analyze what it is you're trying to enjoy. The materialists are trying to enjoy things that are not at all enjoyable. It's like the story that Asura likes to tell about the boy and the frog. The boy's throwing stones at the frog, and the frog says, "What are you doing?" And the boy says, "Well, I'm enjoying." And it says, "Happiness for you, but it's killing me." So it's like that. Whatever we're trying to enjoy in this world is at somebody else's expense. It's at our own expense for the future karma that you have to suffer. And the very thing itself is not really worth enjoying. If you analyze, we try to enjoy this body. What is this body? Skin, bone, blood, pus, mucus. So you have to bring them to that analytical step first. They can't appreciate prema from the position of trying to enjoy matter. So you have to show them analytically that what you're trying to enjoy is not actually enjoyable. And if they are a little bit advanced in intelligence, they can understand that. They can begin to see that, yeah, I'm really just going down a dead end here. I'm creating future misery in terms of karma. Whatever you do is going to bring some reaction in the future, good or bad. And even the good is bad because you have to take birth again to enjoy good karma in the future. It's like that. You have to bring them, first of all, to that analytical viewpoint, and then they can start to understand.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.